All right, my name is Ryan Fox. This is starting and running a successful open source project. My qualifications, so to speak, I've started a few open source projects. I won't pass judgment of whether they're successful or not. I started Nola, which is an accounting and ERP web-based software. CCC, which is a job tracking and inventory software. And PortScan, which is a web-based security tool. hopefully we'll cover today some reasons why and why not to start an open source project, how you would go about doing that, some licenses, some different open source licenses and the pros and cons, and some examples of some open source projects and what's good about them and what's not. And then we'll take some questions. Alrighty. Has anyone here contributed to an open source project? Like written some code, some graphics, anything? What was it?
Which project is an extent for
where? Ah, cool. Alrighty. Why did you do it? well, some reasons I wrote down are generosity. Personally, I use all sorts of open source software every day, as well as really anyone on the internet. They'll visit Apache servers, and their mail will probably be passed over send mail or something. And after a while, I got to thinking that I use so much open source software, I feel bad because I'm not doing anything about it. So I just wanted to give something back. So that's one of the reasons why I released some open source software. Another kind of reason is fame. Everyone knows Linus Torvalds, of course, and there's a few other kind of well-known people. But once you get into the open source community, it's not all that big. And if you release something that's really cool, lots of people will know your name, which is kind of cool if you're into that. Another reason is too much free time. If you're just sitting around and not really doing anything else, why not? And open source projects really can eat up your time, so that's a reason. Some reasons why not, why you wouldn't want to do open source. Money is one. I guess theoretically, some people say that there's an open source business model and you can make money doing it, but I've never actually met these people. It's most likely to be a money drain in web hosting and your time and all sorts of other stuff. The other reason why you shouldn't do it is if you're expecting all sorts of help. If you develop something cool that lots of people want, and they share your vision, then you might get a few people to help you. But really, there's a lot of open source projects that are just a one-person thing. The GD graphics library that like PHP and all sorts of other stuff use is like one guy. And I mean, even the largest projects like Apache, they'll only have like 10 or 15 core people that sit around all day and write code. And the rest are just like people that contribute a patch when they find something that needs fixed. So how to start one? there aren't like, you know, government forms to fill out. It's not tough to start an open source project. You basically write code and you say, okay, here it is. But just the general process of what you should go through, you just have to start with an idea of something that you want that isn't currently available. If you want software that like does something that you just can't find or that isn't free or that doesn't fulfill everything that you want, then you can just start on something and start coding. Like I said before, if you're running an open source project, you're not going to get all sorts of help, and you're especially not going to when all you have is an idea. You really need to just write code and get your idea out to everyone. Get a tangible product that... Damn it, man. Anyhow, I was saying, you're not going to get all sorts of people that just want to help you just for no reason. You have to actually like have something that looks cool and that is going to fulfill someone's need or that they can see is going to get there. Just having an idea probably won't cut it. So just write some code. a big problem is flexibility. A lot of people, when they start writing software like this, they do it to just scratch their own need. And that's fine, but if you're just scratching your own particular need, unless everyone else in the world has that exact same need, the software won't work for them. So what you realize as you get into it is that you have to design all sorts of flexibility into what you're doing. Otherwise, people can't adapt it to what they're doing. And people do want to adapt it. People are going to want to do things with your software that you never really thought of. So design for flexibility is really a must to get people interested and to get people contributing. Another thing is to talk to friends. Like I said, the open source community is pretty small, and there's probably people that you hang out with that like do graphics or do certain types of code that you're not the best at. And if you can get them involved in what you're doing and pawn work off on them, that's a great thing. So get them involved and get them talking to their friends, and then you can kind of build up on that. I've got written down here SourceForge and Savannah. Does everyone know what those are? Anyone not know? All right. Well, they're just open source hosting facilities that run things like CVS and mailing lists and forums and website hosting that your open source project is going to need eventually. So if you start with one of those from the start, you don't have to do all that systems administration work. You can just get into that and let them do that for you, which is really nice. Those are free services. And picking a name for the project, the most important part. Basically, you just want to be sure that you're not infringing on copyrights or anything like that. Leslie Orchard wrote in an Advogado article that you should pick a name where people, after hearing it, like users and developers, they'll both know what your project does and they'll remember it tomorrow, which is pretty good. That's a good idea. Alrighty. So after you've written something, when should you release it? For small projects, you should have a working version. It doesn't need to be feature complete. It doesn't need to do everything that you envision it doing. And really it shouldn't, because if you release it right away that does everything that you want, then there's nothing else to do. For larger projects, it is okay to just release ideas out there. They should be polished and they should be communicated well, like nice-looking documents and things like that. For larger projects, that is just not feasible for one person to do all the code themselves. So for that, it's okay just to release ideas about what you want to do and how you want it to be done, and to solicit some help. And doing that, you want to be sure that not dead set in your ideas, if they're not like very concrete and inflexible, because there's going to be people that come across your idea and say, well, that's great, but I know a better way. And there's people out in the world that are smarter than you, smarter than everybody else. So don't be dead set in your ideas. Allow for that help and be flexible and change as help comes in. After you release something, give yourself a few days to respond to questions and email. It doesn't always happen that, you know, as soon as you release something that and your idea gets out into the world, that there's a huge influx of activity and people wanting to know more about your idea and to be a part of it. But it can happen, and if you release your code Friday night as you're going out for the weekend, then people aren't going to hear from you for a few days, which isn't a good thing. So give yourself a few days when you do that to be able to respond to email and stuff. I wanted to touch on a few things on copyright. A lot of open source people are confused about what copyright is. It's basically the notice of who owns your software. Now, even though it's open source software, as the writer, you technically own it. You license it to everyone else and say, okay, if it's GPL, then I'll let you use it and I'll let you see the code, but if you change it and make changes, then you have to do the same. And as the copyright owner, it's your responsibility to enforce that. If someone, say Microsoft, were to take your code and use it and not obey those licensing terms, then it's your responsibility to go to court and make them your bitch. But a copyright, like a lot of things, it can be assigned. A lot of open source software will dual copyright their software with the Free Software Foundation, which is basically a bunch of lawyers that sit around and make Microsoft their bitch. But one thing to realize when you're doing that is that when you give away half your copyright so that you own the software and the Free Software Foundation owns your software, is that later on you can't relicense it with an incompatible license. If you had GPL software and you say, okay, Free Software Foundation, you own it too because I can't fight Microsoft, then later on you can't take your software back and say, okay, it's proprietary now because you don't own it anymore. So it's a pro and con there. If you're sure that you're never going to want to change your license like that, then that's a good way to make it defensible by giving it to the Free Software Foundation. And basically to do that, to give copyright, you just put a notice in your code that says copyright, year, your name, and that's it. There aren't like forms to fill out or anything. It's just what you put on there. If you assign it to the Free Software Foundation, you do need to contact them to be sure that they know about it. But other than that, that's it. So that brings us to open source licenses. you'll want to choose these carefully. They have subtle differences that determine what others can do with your work. And depending on what you want out of your software project, it can be a big difference. And also, it's not necessarily something that you can change later on. If you GPL something later and then later on you want to make it proprietary so other people can't use it, then your earlier versions are still under the GPL, and other people can still take those earlier versions and do whatever they want with them. So if it's really important to you, like you do and get as part of a business, contacting a lawyer isn't a bad idea. It's really important to choose the right license. So if you're not sure then talk to a lawyer that specializes in that, or the new project, we'll do some consulting for you. And the other thing is, if you incorporate some third-party software, like some libraries or something, you have to be sure that your license is compatible with theirs. If you have a proprietary library that you've linked to, and then you license your software under the GPL and release their source code, they're going to be pissed off because you violated their license because they were proprietary and didn't want their source to be released. Alrighty. About the GPL, it basically says that you have to distribute your source code, and that if someone that uses your software if someone that uses your software makes changes to it and distributes those changes, then they have to release the source code for those changes as well. If you're writing a library and you release it under the GPL, then any software that makes use of your library has to be GPL as well. It has to release the source. There's also the lesser GPL, the LGPL, which is mostly just made for libraries. And it says that you have to distribute your source code, and any others that make changes to your source and distribute it have to release their source as well. But in the case that different software links to your library, they don't have to release their source. They can be proprietary. So that's mostly just useful for libraries where you don't mind that proprietary software uses it. There's the BSD license, which says that you have to distribute your source code, but if someone takes your code and makes changes to it, then then they don't have to distribute the changes. Also, in the case of a library, they don't have to distribute any changes or distribute their source. So the BSD license is for when you don't mind that proprietary software uses it at all, or changes it and sells it themselves or anything. Alrighty. I want to cover a few open source projects and what they did that's really good and what they did that screwed themselves up. The first example I've got is Apache, the Apache web server. And it started in 1995 when the NCSA web server stopped production. That was a widely used web server at the time, and the NCSA just didn't want to work with it anymore, so they stopped, and the Apache group started as a mailing list where people would just distribute patches to NCSA to do more things with it, and that's actually where the name of Apache came from, Apache web server. But it just started as 8 people. They did their first public release in April and released their code as 1.0 in December of 95. And by December of 96, it was the most widely used web server. So they had a lot of usage very quickly. So it's quite successful, of course. Why that is, they had a real clear goal that was well-defined. They wanted to be a web server. There's no other things that it does. It's a web server. And that was its goal from the beginning. It filled a market need. There was NCSA, and as it went out of use, then Apache just took its place. So there's a big gaping hole in that web server market that Apache just fell into. As they grew and got more successful, they got support and money from different businesses that relied on it. IBM gave them all sorts of money, their core developers are mostly all employed by companies like IBM, Compaq, Covalent. Is that the company that sells Apache? I think so. There's a company that sells a version of Apache to people that want to pay for it, and they employ a few core developers too. So they got business support, so people don't have to just donate their time. They can actually make money from it, which is a good thing. And they had a well-designed core architecture, so people that wanted to change it and make it do new things could do so easily without a whole lot of hassle. So it really just fell into the place of being the de facto web server. So that was very successful. Another one is Samba project. Samba makes Unix boxes talk SMB, which is a normal Windows protocol. It started in 1992 by Andrew Trigell, because he had a specific need to run SMB on his one Unix box. And he wrote just enough to do to fill his particular need. And he released it as open source, got a few bug fix emails, and then nothing really happened for a few years. But this is back in 92, before the internet really took off, before lots of teenagers ran Linux. So there wasn't a real big need for that at the moment. A few years later, he had a similar need to serve SMB from a Linux box. And he tried his code, and sure enough, it still worked. A few years later on Linux instead of a proprietary Unix, and it still worked. So he decided to get interested in it again, to build more features in it. And sure enough, it kept growing, and more people became interested in it as it started filling the need of people that ran their Linux boxes and needed them to talk to their Windows boxes. So now there's about 20 active developers. An interesting thing about Samba is that it survived a fork in the year 2000, where a few of the core developers decided that they had different goals for the project than the rest of the core developers. So a few of them split off and started Samba TNG, the next generation. And wanted it to do more domain type stuff, some RPC code. But Samba was so good that even though all the core developers split up, and you had one group here, one group here, both projects still exist, and they both do what the core developers envision. Samba TNG does all sorts of domain stuff, and normal Samba does its thing. And they both do quite well, which is pretty rare. Usually a fork will put the developers in such a bad mood that both projects suffer. But in this case, I think they worked themselves out, and they're both doing okay. So Samba is pretty successful. Most Linux distros will install that by default or make it available on their install CDs. Again, it had a clear common goal. It wanted to serve SMB from Linux boxes and talk to Windows boxes. It filled a market need. And it didn't do this when it first started out in 92. There just wasn't a need for it. But it was designed well. And a few years later, when that need did exist, it still worked well enough that some work could be done, and it could fill that need. It also got business support as the market went that way. Lots of big companies felt the need that we don't want Windows servers serving to our all our Windows desktops. We want good Unix servers. So SMB did that. And now Samba does things like network-attached storage and devices that just share out files that aren't even Unix servers. They're just cheap little proprietary boxes. And Samba runs a whole bunch of those. Again, it had a well-designed core architecture. Even in 92 when Andrew Tajal designed it, he designed it well enough that a few years later when he had a different need, it could be changed easily. And then even today, as it's went through a whole bunch of changes, it's adapted. SourceForge. I mentioned SourceForge earlier as a place to get your free software hosted. But the software that actually runs that, which is called SourceForge, it was started by VA Linux, which is now VA Software, I think, and was originally released as open source. And what happened was, as VA Linux started becoming broke, they had hoped for the SourceForge software to sell lots so that it would fund both the development of the software and do all the free software hosting and all of that things and hopefully make a profit. That didn't happen. So VA Software, being a company, decided that they wanted to change the license so that it was closed source and just sell it instead, not to give it away. So what happened was GNU took that old code that was still licensed under the GPL, and they started their own forked project called Savannah. And because the goals were different, VA Software's goal was to make money, and GNU's goal is to support free software, it's taking a different path. Savannah has lots of good things like importing and exporting project data. If you want to like stop using Savannah and start using some other project management tool, there's a way to migrate that where that didn't exist for SourceForge when VA Software did, because as a business, they don't want you to migrate. So as GNU took that over, they could build that in, and because they had different goals, it really benefits the open source community much more. Also, because that's run by GNU, there's no chance of another future license change of them saying that, okay, we don't want this to be open source anymore, we want to sell it, because GNU has such a good track record of supporting the open source community, there's just no chance of that happening. So if another company wanted to build their business around the Savannah software, they could without the risk of it being turned into being proprietary. So SourceForge itself, it failed as open source because it didn't do what the company expected. That company expected to sell it, even though it was open source and freely available. They had expected to sell it to businesses and make enough money from that to fund it and all its other ventures, and that didn't happen. So SourceForge itself, I would label a failure. But because it was open source, the code just lives on. GNU happened to take that over, but if they had not, then any other organization that had a vested interest in helping out the open source community could take that over and do their own thing with it. If it had been proprietary to begin with, then something would have to be developed from scratch and that work would have to be repeated. So because it was open source at one time, that didn't have to happen. And as GNU took that over, they were able to provide something that VA Software couldn't, and that's the assurance that the code will always be open source, and that Savannah as a hosting facility will always be available as long as a GNU project is, because they have that name that that they'll take care of the open source community. Here's a lesser known example. There's a game developed called Time City, which was started in 1999 by Emmett Plant, who is now the founder, CEO type person of Ziff, who does the Odd Vorbis format and a few other things. His idea was for a first-person shooter where you had like a single map, but the map existed in different times. So if you alter the map in one time, it would have repercussions and affect other time periods. The game failed miserably. What happened was, even though Emmett Plant had good thorough plans and had a real strong idea of how he wanted the game to be, his idea was too strong and inflexible. It got posted on Slashdot after he had some people behind it and had some dots written up. So he had a good infrastructure in place, and then it got posted to Slashdot. It's like, here's a cool open source project if anyone wants to help donate some code or some time. And he had all sorts of volunteer turnout, but his attitude of being inflexible, it drove those people away. As people saw Time City, they would say, okay, that's cool, but I've got this idea, and I've got this idea. And the founder wasn't flexible enough to incorporate those. So that ended up failing. The lesson learned should be that volunteers can help, but only if the project meets their vision, too. No one wants to work on a project that isn't going to provide something that they want. Here's a good example, Mozilla. It started in 1998 after Netscape threw in the towel on Communicator and said that, okay, we're not selling it anymore. We're going to open up our source because Internet Explorer was just killing them, giving it away for free. Mozilla hoped to compete with Internet Explorer because they were no cost as open source. You know, they don't have any cost to try and recoup, whereas Microsoft does. Even though they give out Internet Explorer with Windows, they still have real development costs that they have to make up somewhere. Not only that, but with Netscape out of the market, Internet Explorer didn't have any reason to adhere to standards anymore. Back before 98, when the browser market was split about 50-50, Microsoft couldn't do real bad proprietary things with Internet Explorer because they didn't have all that market share. Now, a few years later, they do, and they can pretty much do whatever they want with HTML. But back in 98 when Mozilla started, that was one of its goals, to compete with IE and try and take enough market share that Microsoft couldn't do those evil things. They had a whole bunch of well-defined goals, and they finally met those with a 1.0 version in June of 2002. So that was 4 years later that they finally met their goals and released a 1.0 version. So they did reach their goal, even though it was very slowly. They ended up replacing the entire rendering engine that was written by Netscape with their own called Gecko for more standards compliance. The Netscape engine didn't support a lot of the newer technologies, and Netscape couldn't afford to dump resources in there to put that in. It really only happened when it was open source, and the open source community that didn't cost anything could put those things in. Mozilla ended up spawning a whole other line of projects like the Phoenix web browser and the Komodo IDE, because Mozilla itself is just so flexible that you can use like the HTML language to change the user interface to make a whole other application. So even though Mozilla perhaps fails as a web browser because it doesn't have a lot of market share, the project isn't necessarily a failure. It provides a web browser to some people that want it. It provides a whole other platform for hosting applications using the HTML. So even if it fails as a web browser, I wouldn't chalk it up as a whole entire loss. I had PowerPoint slides in my talk, but I decided not to use them. If you want, come up after, and I've got a URL for that. And I've got my email address if anyone has any questions that they don't want to talk about now. But does anyone have any questions that they do want to cover? We'll sit here for 20 minutes. I swear to God, we will. Core. It's okay. It's a PHP and MySQL. You'll take an nmap scan and output it in XML, like -o x, and you can submit that to my port scan tool, and it records what ports are open, the host name, the uptime, all the stuff that nmap outputs, which is pretty cool because you can do that for like your network, and when a new vulnerability comes out, you can just say, okay, I wonder on how many boxes am I running DNS, and you can just plug that into port scan and find out and go fix those boxes. On the converse side, as an attacker, you can port scan someone else's network and plug all that info in and say, okay, there's a new DNS exploit. Let's see who's running DNS and get a list of those boxes. So it can be used for good and bad. But it's coming along. Absolutely. The project did have like an art director and a few other people, so there was like a clear leadership on that. And the project marketed itself as having the goal of helping to bring gaming to Linux, because this was like 1999, before Loki and some of those became pretty big. So it was marketed itself, I would say, correctly, and had like leaders, so that even though there was a whole bunch of people talking, there was still like someone to talk to, which was important. But yeah, especially because it's a game, there is certainly the issue of there isn't one clear vision.
Okay. I would say
Yeah.
And release early, release often.
Yep. Both good things. He said use CVS and release early, release often. And yeah, using CVS isn't necessarily enough. Using it correctly is very valuable. And both SourceForge and Savannah offer CVS access, so you don't have to place this admin and set that up yourself. And using Google, there's all sorts of CVS tutorials. CVS is a versioning system so that like you start out with a set of code and then you make changes, and your both versions are still available. You can revert to back to that first one or see the differences, and it just has all sorts of uses for people that want to find out how your software is changing. Anything else? All righty. Thank you very much.